And you're very welcome to the latest edition of the STEM Inspirations podcast, brought to you by the BT Young Scientist and Technology Exhibition. Now, this episode is all about BT Young Scientist Business Bootcamp, which was launched 14 years ago. Every year, we invite 30 of our prize winners to join us for a four-day commercialization, entrepreneurship, and innovation workshop. They work in teams and pitch their ideas to a panel of senior judges at the end of the week. During the four-day program, the students hear from a number of very interesting guest speakers, including many BT Young Scientist and Technology Exhibition alumni. And you're going to hear from one of them right now. Rona Tarr from List Group is always one of our most popular speakers at Bootcamp. Herself and Emer Carl founded their company from another BT Young Scientist Technology project, one which saw them ranked in the top four way back in 2009. Now, Rona's talks are always very interesting as she gives insights to the struggles herself and Emer have had in raising funding and talk about how it was crucial that they never gave up. Always a wonderful addition to the boot camp, and she even brought a camera crew along with her on this occasion as she was being filmed for a documentary which will feature herself and Emer, due for release a little later in the year. But here she is, Rona Tarr.
We first did a Young Scientist project when we were in fifth year. We'd actually spend our transition year, we were incredibly bored. We spent our transition year building a robot out of Lego and making it dance. And that's how we filled our time. We just couldn't figure out how to entertain ourselves. And we'd never heard of the BT Young Scientist competition. It wasn't something that our school did. I don't know, it's, it seems to be a thing that either your school does it or it doesn't. And our school definitely didn't. So we hadn't a clue what we were doing when it came about. And after we did our robot project, we had a new physics teacher in the school. You probably saw in the picture, man with the beard. He was saying that we could do the Young Scientist if we were interested in doing something else. And both of us were really interested in music and sound. So we did a project about how people tell where sound is coming from. So we took a really old kind of scaldy room in the school and we covered it in egg boxes that we spent 3 months trying to get everyone to bring in to make a soundproof room. And we did a lot of tests on how people tell where sound is coming from. And what we learned was that men are better at it than women. And as men get older, they get better at it than women again, which was very disappointing for us in an all-girl Catholic school. But we brought our project to the Young Scientist who were in the senior physics category, and the judges said, this was really interesting science. It was very rigorous. And we won our category, and we were like, great, we're delighted. This is brilliant. This is as good as it gets. But the judges said, you know, it looks like you have like a great foundation of research here. You know, you could do something else. But in our head, we didn't realize you could keep going in the Young Scientist. You could go again. I'm sure maybe some of you have done more than one project. No? Yes, we're nodding. Yes. So they said, if you're interested in something else, you know, keep going with your research. And Emer played the drums in a band called the Sunstroke Penguins. She had these giant yellow drums. Band, questionable. But I used to go and see her band a lot and go to a lot of concerts. And we're both really interested in music. So something we were both exposed to was tinnitus, which is the ringing that you get in your ears after exposure to loud noise or music. Has anybody ever experienced tinnitus? Yes. Well, tinnitus is actually a sign of permanent hearing damage, and we didn't know that at the time. You know, usually you're like, I had an amazing night out, but really you didn't, or you probably still did. So for our science project, we wanted to learn about tinnitus, who it affected, how it was impacting young people, because it seemed to be a thing that was mostly the older generation we're talking about. And then we wanted to see if there was something that we could actually make ourselves to help treat our tinnitus, because most of the stuff that was out there was kind of snake oil, you know. So for our science project, we learned a lot about sound, how the ear works, how the brain works, and we developed a low-frequency sound therapy that you could listen to that would reduce the severity of your tinnitus. So we brought this to the Young Scientist. We were in sixth year at the time, so we'd done the whole project in the summer because we were absolutely broken by all of the subjects. And when we went to the exhibition, we were like, oh, what we made, this is great. And what we weren't expecting was hundreds of members of the public to come in and ask how could they get access to our sound therapy. And you know, we had just had it made on our computer. You know, we barely had internet at home. And this was 2009. I'm sure a lot of you were barely born at that stage. So, you know, the internet was very new. startups weren't really a thing. Digital health wasn't really a thing. And for us, at the end of the competition, we were really proud of how far we'd come, but we knew we wanted to do more, but we didn't know how. And we were both about to go off to university, but we were going into separate universities. I actually came here to UCD, and Emer went off to Edinburgh to study physics. And we didn't know how we would further our work. And we weren't exposed to entrepreneurship. We didn't know anyone who had a small company. So the idea of setting up a business didn't really come to us. But I'm sure that you, maybe, I'm not sure where in the timeline you are in the week, but if you've had a talk by the local enterprise offices or Enterprise Ireland yet. So there's things called local enterprise offices that help companies like in your region, like if you're in your Galway or Donegal or your Mayo, and they help small companies set up. So our local enterprise office in Sligo said, you know, you could become a business and we can give you a grant and that'll help you to establish your website and set it up, and then you can start making money and you continue to grow your company. And we thought, okay, right, that sounds easy, that sounds doable, we'll do it. So in May of 2009, in those school uniforms, we signed our incorporation papers in school, and then that June we sat our unit cert, and then we spent the summer building our website and trying to get our sound therapy online so that people could use it. And then in that August we sold our first product. Hooray. But true Jesus, we didn't know what we were doing at all. So we went off to university that September and thought, no problem, we'll just like boopity boo on the computer on the side in the evening, and this business will be buying us helicopters and a few years time. But we had no idea how to scale anything, or, you know, the regulations behind digital health or how things were changing. So we went to university and we got lots of help from places like Nova, where we could learn about intellectual property and how to grow a business. But really, we had underestimated massively what we'd taken on. So we were about a year into university when we had been working with people who had tinnitus for a long enough time that we got a much greater understanding of how they were exposed to loud noise, why they were getting this hearing damage, where they were getting it from. And ever the young scientist, we decided we needed to do more. We needed to do another project. So what we looked at was where they were getting exposed to loud noise, why they were still getting hearing damage if they were in a workplace and they were wearing hearing protection. And we looked at the headsets that they were wearing. And we actually have some upstairs. It'd be great if I had my props. These headsets, they just have a small piece of foam inside. That foam is essentially rubbish. It's not really doing very much. And the acoustic materials industry hasn't innovated in decades. People aren't looking at materials, you know. I think probably you heard from the guys yesterday. It's really easy to do software, so easy. But hardware, really difficult. Hardware, you get it? No. Come on. We started to look at materials. We looked at advanced materials. And we looked at the way that materials absorb energy. And we were coming at it from a completely different place to traditional acousticians, because we didn't have an acoustics background. We had a physics background, so we knew about energy. And I'm sure you're familiar with non-Newtonian fluids, maybe for a lot of your projects. Non-Newtonian fluids, yeah. And a lot of those non-Newtonian fluids are used for things like, you know, you fill a pool with custard and you can run on it and you're Jesus walking on water. And that's used in shock absorption in like car bumpers and helmets. And what we wanted to do was use something that was the complete opposite. So we wanted to use thixotropic materials, materials that are solid-like until you expose them to energy, you like shake them up and they become more liquid-like, you know, like a toothpaste or honey. So these are all household examples of the material. And we thought, these materials absorb energy. Can they absorb sound energy? Could we use those, because they're really affordable, they're really accessible, could we use those to absorb noise? So we did some initial testing and we found that these materials did work, and if we put them in a structure that we designed, it's kind of like a honeycomb, it worked even better. So we were like, great, this is our next young scientist project. Now it's our new business. So instead of just helping to treat people who had tinnitus, we were also going to help prevent their avoidable hearing damage in the first place, which is what we really wanted to do. So this was 2010. So we were kind of leaping ahead quite quickly. And that's when we went to file our first patent, the one that we're nominated for here today. As you can imagine, or maybe not, I think times have completely changed, but like 2 19-year-olds walking into a patent office being like, we've invented something. You know, the first patent attorney that we went to didn't want to take us on, likely thought that we didn't have any money, that our idea wasn't going to work, and that we had no follow through. Little did they know. But then we eventually found an amazing plant attorney who has been beside us throughout this entire journey and really fought really hard with us for our technology and really helped us to really grow our business properly. So we filed for our patent because we thought that's the sensible thing to do. You need to have intellectual property if you're going to be a hardware business. And side by side running our tinnitus therapy and establishing our new technology, the business kind of careered into this much bigger thing than two university students could really do. So at that time, I then left university. I'm on a sabbatical, semi-permanent sabbatical, but it's still a sabbatical. If UCD asks, I can come back anytime. So I left university then to work full-time on the company as the CEO and to like raise us money to be able to pay for testing and prototypes. And as Mary said, that was very difficult. You know, we really didn't know much about the funding landscape or venture capital. Where do people even get money? And maybe you're going to hear a little bit about that this week, but there's the local enterprise office, there's Enterprise Ireland, there's Business Angels, there's venture capital, vulture capital, whichever you want to call it. And all of these places are ways for you to not just fund your business, but grow your business. And we were really muddling through how to actually get that. So that initial support from the local enterprise office is great. And then you kind of graduate from there and you go to Enterprise Ireland. So for me to leave college, I needed to get that money. So I pitched Enterprise Ireland and I was like, I'm going to have a great big business. Didn't think we'd get the money, but we did. And that was 50,000. That 50,000 paid for our first testing, paid for our first prototypes. We did it actually all here in UCD in the physics building. And that verified that our technology worked. It verified that it worked in a headset, that it worked so much better than existing materials, that it gave us all of the ammunition that we needed to go and ask for funding from venture capital, so to look for much more money. So that was around 2012. And then in 2013, I really wanted Emer to come home from college because I knew I couldn't do it alone. I can only do half of the jobs. She does the other half of the jobs, and what she's good at, I am really, really bad at. And that is something I would highly recommend to anyone who is going to establish a company. Do not go it alone. Have either someone who is much smarter than you or your best friend actually come and help you. Hopefully you will see her coming by later. So I really wanted her to come home, but for her to come home and to work for the company, I needed to have money. So my job then was to go out and look for venture capital and try and get that, but sure, I didn't know how much to ask for. I didn't know how much of the business I was going to sell, and I didn't know where we were going to get it from. But we were lucky enough to actually, at a kind of a student entrepreneurship event, meet a venture capital firm called SOSV, who run now actually tons of accelerators all over the world for really specific types of things. If you're into bio or hardware or SaaS, they're a great place to go, and they have loads of resources online as well. They heard us talk and they were like, you know what, sounds good. Let's have another meeting. And at the meeting, I had brought a headset and it had some of our material in it. And the VC put it on, ran up to a bin truck, stood beside the bin truck and went, yeah. And that was it. It was very effective, very practical use of the material to see how it actually worked. And he said, yeah, okay. But we still were in a position where I was like, right, Emer needs to come home. We need to establish the company and we need to get some staff. You know, it was still just me like working in a bedroom, like people thinking I was crazy. So with the money from SOSB, we got 500,000 and I was like, great, we'll be able to live off this forever. That money did not last very long. But their help and their resources really did. So most venture capitalists, some are useless, some are helpful, some have supports that they can give you, some don't. But SOS had an office in China and they said, oh, you want to do manufacturing? Should get on a plane to China. And I was like, okay, fine. And I blindly went to China and went on Alibaba and tried to message suppliers and manufacturers to say, can I come visit your factory? Is your factory real? Some factories were real, some factories were not real. Some factories were fabulous, some were like a shed in a bucket. But that's the that's what you get when you go to China, you find out how things are really made. And that was a really good learning experience for us to see how, what's kind of behind the curtain for manufacturing, because if you're looking at doing something like manufacturing, very expensive to do it locally. But then you have great oversight on things. But it's really interesting to see what they're doing out in Asia and kind of learn from that. But at that point, we'd hired a few people, and we had done an accelerator program, which we didn't really love. It wasn't the right place for us. And we moved into our first office and hired some of our first team members, some of whom are here today. Wave your hands, Claire. She loves working here.
Yeah.
She's still here. And we were like, okay, what we need is tons of money if we're going to manufacture this, you know, if we're going to actually scale this up. And so we started to talk to companies and we said, we have great new hearing protection. Do you want it? And the company said no. And we went, oh shit, no. But they were like, no, just not like that. So what we learned was that we really cared about people's hearing. We really cared about what they were exposed to at work. And their employers did not. They cared about their equipment. They cared about the machinery. They cared about the emissions from their vehicles or their planes. And we went, okay, well, we can do that as well. We haven't just made a new type of hearing protection to protect you at work. We have created a material that can be put into anything. But the sample that we had at the time was probably the size of my phone, and we needed to figure out how to make it bigger. So we said, okay, we'll get all these companies, you know, chemical companies, the automotive companies, the aerospace companies, we'll get them all to say that they want it, and then we'll use that to go and get more money to build out the team to scale our technology. And as Mary said, we found it very hard to get money. And at the time, I think things have completely changed over the last few years with like more exposure to women in business, and we've learned a lot as well. But at the time, we would walk in and they would laugh at us and say, that's not going to work, you're never going to do it, that company isn't talking to you. And I'm like, but here's the NDA, we just can't show it to you. And we really struggled with kind of convincing people that we were going to be able to do this and getting them to believe in us. And they all said, I won't give you the money, but maybe these guys will. And when you keep hearing that, you go, okay, fine. I'm just going to stop like trying to beat this drum. I can't hear any more no's, and we're running out of cash. And all of them told us to go to the European Commission. They were like, they fund women. We were like, all right, okay, we'll go there. And at this point, we needed 2.5 million. You know, I wasn't asking for 50 grand anymore. We needed a lot of money to fund the company, and we needed to set up our own lab and start manufacturing. So it took a really long time, but we eventually got through to the European Commission, and they gave us 2.3 million to scale the company. And this was a grant, which was great, so I didn't have to sell any of my money or send any of the company to the venture capitalists that I didn't like and that didn't like me. I was like, great, win-win. So in 2019, we got that money, and it was great for like 6 months, and then there was COVID, and we were like, oh, we just got our big break. Now we have to close. So we had to close our labs after we just hired some of the last people for the team, and they never even really got into the lab space, which is devastating for us because we're sitting here like setting money on fire, paying for a lab we can't use. It's just as Irish people, I feel like we can't do. We're not very self-look with the money. So we had to kind of re-strategize what we were going to do with that time. And we doubled down on learning about things like regulation, and you know, we did an awful lot of digital content to try and see how we can like bolster the capital of the money and bolster the team. But at this point, you know, we had to be responsible. We weren't just like two 18-year-olds running a company anymore. You know, we were nearly 30 and we had staff and they had houses and babies. It's like, oh my God, your life's in my hands. But we knew that we had finally gotten the support of the EU, and that with that, we could kind of set up a really strong foundation for the company, because it's very hard to do without a lot of money. So with that, money is now all gone, just in case you're wondering, blew through it. So that was 2019. So for 2020 and 2021, we had to try and scale up the technology to this really big size so that we could sell it to these companies. get them to put it in their car. And very concerned that we couldn't do it, but towards the end of 2021, the start of 2022, we finally made one. It was like this size. And I was like, look, the wall. Nearly broke it putting it in my car to try and take it to the test facility. But we got it there eventually, and we got to test it. We compared it to the other shite that they're selling out there, and it was so much better. It was so much thinner. It's actually eco-friendly. The existing materials are like tar-like substances, and it's just really bad for the environment. So we were able to verify it, compare it to everything else, and go back to these companies and say, we did it. It's now big. It's the ISO standard that you want. You know, what can we do now? So now what we are working on as a business with our research team and our commercialization team is integrating our technology into components in vehicles, dishwashers, buildings like ceiling tiles, roofs, aerospace projects. We're also doing a load of work with the European Space Agency, what they currently use in shuttles, in like the nose cone at the very top, to protect the satellites, the payload that goes up. Kind of looks like a mattress, a really thick mattress. It's not very high tech. And, you know, those satellites are exposed to extreme noise and vibration, and they're damaged practically by the time they get up there. So what's the point in sending it up there if it's going to be turned to rubbish? So what they need to do is they need to improve what they're currently using. And they're working with us, of all people, to improve the fairing acoustic protection, FAP, nose cone, to protect their payloads and also increase the size of their payloads. And, you know, that validation from someone like the European Space Agency for a company like ours that has struggled so much with proving ourselves, proving our technology, you know, getting people to believe that our results are our results, is really, really powerful for our business now. So we did a phase one project with the European Space Agency over the last year, and that just verified how well our technology worked. And now we're doing a phase two project, which is worth nearly €1 million to scale down the size of our technology and actually get it into the fairing acoustic protection, which is amazing for us. So we can say to every car company and aero company, we're working with ESA. If it's going into a satellite or into a shuttle, you can put it in your car. So the most of the applications we're doing now are things like, you're looking at e-vehicles. E-vehicles are quiet. That is not true. They make different noise. They make loads of road noise, and they have a lot less space for material as well. So there's usually like 50 kilos of acoustic material in a car, and now the battery is at the bottom, and it's absolutely humongous, and they don't have any space to put in the material. So what they're looking at doing is putting in ours, which is great for us. So we're now at that next cusp. So like before, where we had no money, and we needed to get money from the EU, and now we've spent all the EU money, and now we have no money and we need to get more investment. So now we're trying to raise like 10, 15 million to scale up our pilot production. So we actually have to set up a factory. Something we always said, me and Emer, was we know nothing about manufacturing. We're not manufacturers. We can't set up a factory. And we thought, we'll partner with a chemical company and they'll manufacture it for us. And the chemical company said, that's not how it works. You have to do it first and then we'll buy it off you. So they told us that if we set up pilot production, we'll prove out how it works, and then they can license it from us and then they'll take it on. And I was like, all right, okay, that sounds easy, but that costs 10 million. So now I need to go and find 10 million. If you know anyone, tell them I'm looking. I can ask Kieran yesterday, he's got a few spare. That's where the business is now. We've kind of gone on this really long journey from egg boxes in a room at 16, trying to find out how you tell where sound is coming from, and then working through with our Tinnitus sound therapy, which we still sell today and is used by hundreds of people, and it's really something that's at the very core of our company, to now trying to fundamentally change how acoustics are thought about, how they're dealt with, how those materials are used, and how they're even made. Trying to kind of disrupt a really old dinosaur industry is very difficult, but you just have to wait around long enough. You know, 5 years ago, people were laughing at us when we talked about noise and acoustics, and now every single regulation has come through, thankfully, through the EU, And all of these technologies have changed and they need new materials. And we were kind of sitting there ready, we were waiting. We're like, it's time, it's our time. We have the materials, you can use them now. So it was really a test of our resilience to kind of push through the no money, the all the money, the no interest in the market, the huge interest in the market, to get to this point now where we have a huge pipeline of companies who want to use it. And now we just can't grow quick enough. You know, we don't have enough staff, which is a really good place to finally be in. But we are still very, very aware of where we came from in those uniforms that you saw earlier, that, you know, that is really at the core of our business. And we still feel like when we're working together, that it is kind of just a really big continuation of our Young Scientist project that me and Emer found when we worked on it. We worked really well together. Our skills really complemented each other. We loved working together. We're still best friends. And that has really helped kind of career us forward and push us through when those like peaks and troughs come when you're in business.
What a great inspiration Rona Tarr is, and we wish all the best to herself and Emer as they take their company on to bigger and better things. So that is the first visit of the STEM Inspirations podcast to the BT Young Scientist Business Bootcamp, but we'll have more on our next podcast episode, so please keep your eyes peeled for that one. We're going to hear from some of the students that took part and some other special contributors too. But in the meantime, mind yourselves out there. And stay curious.